never filtered, always fun.
I don't think you can get food in this building anymore. Everyone talks about this food truck that people claim is here. I've never seen anything of the sorts. I'm not even joking. I don't think there's really a food
truck.
It's
unbelievable.
No one I've talked to has actually seen it.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. We are live at BMO Field ahead of the Argos Red Blacks game tonight. Brian Hayes, Gord Miller. I have found my favorite jersey infraction.
What do you got for me?
A Chad Kackert 25 home white.
Kack attack.
But it says Kack attack instead of Kackert.
Yeah.
And for my money, it does not get any better than that.
Can I just tell you about my favorite skin foul today?
Yes.
So I go to the bank today, had to get some U.S. cash, going away next week, and the person in front, two in front of me, has a tattoo down his arm, and it says, knowledge is power. But knowledge is capital everything but the D, which was clearly put in later. So originally, knowledge was spelled K-N-O-W-L-E-G-E. No D. So they had to go back and get, like, a small D
right
put in.
The beauty of that is two idiots missed it.
Yes.
Like the tattoo artist obviously didn't know how to spell knowledge.
Right.
But then the guy who was claiming, what was the saying? Knowledge.
Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power. Who was thinking, okay, this will make me powerful because I'm knowledgeable and I'm going to make everyone know that I'm all about knowledge is power. He also didn't pick up on it.
When now, it was on the back of his arm.
So it doesn't matter where it is, though.
Yeah. So what's the movie? We're the Millers, right?
Yes.
No Regrets, and Regrets is spelled wrong?
Yes.
Yeah. You sure you have no regrets? So, yeah. You know what? If I was a con man, I would target people with bad tattoos. Because here's my thinking. These are people that have made a mistake and done it again. So they clearly haven't learned from their mistake. So I think they would be vulnerable to cons.
I think you're probably right. I would like to believe that whoever the con artist was probably didn't need to see the tattoo to know that guy's ripe for the picking.
Like the fact that he's got, you know, food all over his shirt and is walking the wrong way against a red light. And,
yeah,
would be your indication that
probably didn't need to see knowledge.
That's a target-rich environment for a con artist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the Kack attack, I guess. Hey, it's in the building, man.
Oh, I got another one for you. Big Z 19.
Okay, I'm on board with it, man. Bring them all out. Like, there's a lot of people that are starting to pour in here. We've seen some Flutie jersey, but you got to go way back.
So now here's my other thought. If you're not sure about your team, okay. So the Leafs get an Austin Matthews. Going to be here. Put your own name on it.
See, I'm anti that.
You're not trading. You're not getting traded.
I think that's a tough sell, though, because what does that say? You're supporting your fandom? Like, I'm a Leaf fan.
I'm a member of the team. I'm on board. Like, I always laugh when people say, we played a good game last night. Who we? The Leafs. Oh, I didn't see you there.
So you don't like that?
No.
See, I don't have a problem with that because
you're not a we. They're a we.
Yeah, but if you're a fan, you're invested. They don't exist without your fandom collectively.
But you don't play for them.
I understand.
We didn't play a good game last night. They played a good game.
But don't you think that's nitpicking, though? It's like the Open Championship compared to the British Open.
You know, the other one bugs me, hockey parents saying, we played a good game last night. No, your kids did.
That's different because you're trying to put yourself on the ice. You're living vicariously through your kids.
And the difference between that and the Leaf fan is
I'm spending money on it.
Oh, that's
difference. The difference.
So, hey, some hockey parents do pay to get in.
Right, but they have to be there. It's
their kids. There's a guy with a Batista jersey outside.
Multitasking.
He's at the
Jays are playing tonight.
So years ago, I'm going to a Jays game. I'm going to work a Jays game. And this guy comes up and goes, hey, man, what's a TSN guy doing a Neil Young concert, man? I said, Neil Young's playing the CNE down the road.
He thought it was at the Rogers Center?
You're at the wrong stadium, sir. Oh, bummer.
That's a shame. Did he make it on time?
No idea. He might still be, for all I know, he's still wandering down the lakeshore somewhere.
Searching for the X. And Neil Young.
Yeah.
Jays are back in town. They're back in action tonight. Oakland's in the house. Gord's favorite team from his favorite movie and his favorite book. And the executive that he, I believe, has a shrine of in his house, that would be Billy Bean. I don't think he's in town. I doubt he travels. His team's brutal.
It's
Why would
funny,
he be here anyway?
Baseball GMs don't travel with their team like other GMs do. Hockey GMs always travel.
They're
with their
always
team.
On the
Football
road.
GMs always go. Basketball GMs always with their team. I guess a lot of games.
And if your team's brutal, what's the point?
They are brutal. They're in last place
Oakland's
again.
Oakland's awful. The Jays are bad. Here's Dirk Hayhurst, our baseball insider, brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln, your premier source for auto service and sales in the GTA. What was the reaction on the plane or on the bus when the GM actually traveled with the team, Dirk?
I remember everybody walking by. I mean, like, quiet. Especially when you suck, right? It's hard to be like, oh, this is fun. This is
this
awesome.
Is great.
I love flying on this luxury jet, you know. There's the guy who signs my contract that I've been habitually failing for. What better way to reward him than by sucking on field, but then getting wasted and obliterated on a plane that he's paying for? So, yeah, that generally, like, because I always played for bad teams, because that's the only way I could play in the big leagues is if I was on an equally terrible squad, was that we were all kind of like tail between our legs, like, what's up, boss? What's up, boss? And then you get to the back of the plane, right? And then you'd be the guy who, like, this is my role. I'm not supposed to talk about this. But as a rookie, my job was to get a wine spritzer for the coaching staff and GM, if necessary, right? And by wine spritzer, and we had to say wine spritzer or some kind of, like, wine product, because baseball had passed rules about hard liquor consumption.
Right.
So I would go to the back of the plane, and I would get, like, I don't know, like three of those little mini bottles, and I'd mix it into a solo cup of something, right? Of like Coke or whatever. And I'd bring it up, and it'd have like a little sword in the top, you know, with a cherry and like just, you know, whatever. And I'd be like, here's your white wine, sir. Like, you say it like loud and like the worst acting you could ever do, just to make sure that anyone in earshot, like your GM, knew that the coach, who wanted to be stoned more than anybody else on the team,
right,
whose job was directly connected to our failure, could get wasted himself without making it obvious that that's what he was doing. So, yeah, in my experience, that's what it's like to travel with a GM. Next question.
I asked Pat Tabler one time, because he was talking about the Cubs lost like 115 games one year, and I said, how was that? I was in the minors all year. I said, what does that tell you when you're not good enough to play on a team that loses 115 games? You must be, if you're in AAA for a team that's lost over 100 games, you must think you'll never see the big leagues.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the thing about that is, like, you can be playing for a team who's sunk so much money into the guys at the top that they're, like, handcuffed to giving them as many opportunities as they need to have, right?
Right.
And that's when it's really, like, this game is unfair, and it lives to crush your soul. Like, that's the grand conclusion you come to when that's you. And if you don't make it to the big leagues and develop an alcoholic problem by flying on those jets, you know, you're going to have one in the minor leagues because you can't get up there and get one in the big leagues. That's generally how I've understood it to work.
Well, that's where the Wade Boggs legendary story comes from, him traveling from Boston to L.A. and allegedly drinking like 108 beers over the course of the day. And I can't imagine that's possible. Like, scientifically, I don't think you can do that. I feel like the Discovery Channel, when it wasn't Shark Week, they were like researching this at some point.
Mythbusters would get all over.
Yeah, it was like Mythbusters or something like that.
Yeah. But we subjected this man to 108 beers, and sadly he died.
Yeah.
So we think this is a myth.
This is the end of the show for us as well. But I mean, did you hear about that Wade Boggs story? Do you have any intel on that might confirm or deny it?
Now, I don't have any intel on the Wade Boggs story because I was dealing with a way better story when I was in the minors.
Okay, what was it?
But I can tell you the story, or I can let you, you know, go over like this, like modern news. But I'm assuming that you'd rather have the juicy story because the Jays suck. That's just my assumption. So I'm gonna go with the story that I have. Is that
okay?
Fair? We good with
yeah,
that?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so I play with Wally Whitehurst, right? And I think he's a pitching coach up in Minnesota right now. But I played with Wally when he was a AAA coach in Durham for the Bulls. And because I was a Durham Bull for one season of my life, one very forgettable season. And Wally would tell me that he was just a raging, raging alcoholic. Like he would basically be sober for the game that he pitched and then drunk for the rest of it. And that he would say, you know, this is a guy who's reformed now. So he would tell these stories kind of like, as you know, with a sly grin to it, and I'm a reformed man, but it was still like, how are you not dead, you know? And he would go, the thing I like to do is get wasted and just get on random planes and go wherever. And I'm not kidding you, like, I'm not saying he did this during the offseason. I'm saying he would pitch a game, then get wasted, then get on a plane, then 2 days later when he figured out, like he finally sobered up, he'd be like in the middle of Arkansas someplace and be like, well, time to get my way back to New York so I can make my start. I better hop a plane back. Like, that's just how it would go for him. I remember thinking, like, 108 beers from, you know, that might be possible depending on if it's like an American domestic, which was, you know, the equivalent of like dirty water. Or if it's a Canadian beer, you guys are like, no way, because Canadian beer is stronger and better. I could see that. Well, you're skeptical.
Absolutely. American, there's no way he was drinking Molson Canadian. There's no chance.
Right. Exactly. The man's dead if he's drinking Molson Canadian. Okay,
right.
If it's Molson American, it's a different conversation. He probably has diarrhea, too, and he just regrets it like a marriage. Anyway, but with the Wally Whitehurst thing, man, it was like, how? I mean, and it wasn't like, yeah, you know, I did it for a year, and then they figured out I had a problem. It was like, no, it was an habitual thing that happened for seasons. How, you know, how does that take place, right? How does a man function at this level? And that's when I realized, even at my most sober, with like, even if I had performance-enhancing drugs in my system, I will never be as good as this guy was wasted for most of his career. God help me. That was the conclusion I took from that.
Now, I want to ask you a question, Dirk. We had this conversation half an hour ago. It's Gord Miller here. I want to know, Moneyball, it's a bit overstated, right? Come on.
But are we talking about, like, the whole, you know, drafting the fringe talent based on all these metrics?
Yeah, but the fact... Yeah, we're talking about, did Oakland succeed because of numbers, or was it Zito, Mulder, and Hudson, Miguel Tejada, and a little bit of Balco in the backyard?
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's all of the above, right? I think, you know, performance-enhancing drugs can make borderline guys not so borderline, you know what I mean?
And they had a disproportionate number in Oakland.
Okay. Well, the other thing that I think the legacy that you got from Moneyball, where people started to value metrics beyond like things that were not directly correlated to performance, like wins and losses, you know, or that conversation about that guy has a hot girlfriend. That's how I know he's good. He's got confidence enough to go hit on a hot girl. I've met a lot of crazy hot women in my day, and you know, it doesn't take confidence. It's going to take a restraining order. One of the two, you know, are going to have to come to the bear. So I think when you start talking about how metrics are used for modern evaluation tools, I think Moneyball lives up to it because it really is the genesis of that. But if we start talking about like just getting enough obscure metrics together to create a winner, well, I know that's complete BS because we can put together great teams and watch them implode like the 2013 Blue Jays did, 2014 Red Sox did. I mean, it's just how some of these teams come together. So I like the narrative, I like the conversation, and I like finding talent where other people don't see it. But at the end of the day, there's always a missing ingredient, and it comes down to either chemistry or ability or luck and opportunity, but it's not just numbers alone.
And scouting did find some of those players. Those scouts that were mocked in Moneyball found a lot of those players.
And a lot of those players weren't the players that were, you know, reportedly these fringe, you know, finds that, like, you know, we have a fat kid with a computer, probably the guy who hacked the DNC, according to Donald Trump, but a fat kid with a computer, you know, figuring out how these talented players are that you got to go out and buy for a bargain. Yeah, I totally agree with you.
With Dirk Hayhurst, our Jays analyst, Jose Bautista, we were talking about him throughout the afternoon, and he had a quote over the weekend yesterday when he was asked about, you know, minor trades and the idea that maybe the Jays could make more deals between now and the end of the deadline that could actually bolster the lineup. And he said something along the lines, I'm paraphrasing, of, yeah, you know, a shot in the arm could never hurt anybody. As defeated as I've heard him, as deflated as I've heard him, this is the guy who was the spokesman, not only for the team, but the city, the fan base in previous years leading up to a deadline, trying to activate moves, trying to get Anthopoulos and others to actually spend money or make trades and get crazy and bolster the lineup. He was always the guy who was energetic and pushing for that. To hear him in such a defeated state, I mean, I'm kind of surprised it's gotten to this point, just based on the bravado, the confidence, who he is. I mean, what do you make of his comments and just Bautista's demeanor, considering what's going on?
Well, he's always been easy to read. Always been easy to read. And a lot of his commentary is a direct reflection of his own internal monologue. And he's a selfish guy. You know, I don't mean to say that Jose Bautista is the kind of guy who sees starving orphans and has plenty of food and says, nope, none for you, orphans. I'm not saying that. I think he's a generous, kind individual, but he's a selfish baseball personality. You know, when he thinks his team is good, he trusts his judgment over just about anyone else, and he is not afraid to take it to the microphone or on the record and tell you that management needs to get off its ass and spend money and go get people to reinforce this because what we have is a good thing. And he's done that. He's not afraid to tell you that he'll fight anyone anytime or he'll punish anybody who comes inside on him when he feels like he can do it. And conversely, when the team is not very good, he's never going to be the guy who comes out there and says, like, you know what? This is a gilded turd. We're amazing. You know? I mean, he's right. Going to be like, I mean, I think you got the diplomatic answer from him. And it was a fair answer. Like, it can't hurt. Yeah, it can't hurt, but I don't think it's going to help either. And I don't think you're going to ever expect this guy to be like, all right, guys, bring it in. We got Rudy on three. Let's go. We're going to do this, you know? It's never going to be that with Jose Bautista. In a way, I respect that about him because it hasn't changed. You know, he's never been fake about it, which is probably one of the reasons, guys, why it's difficult to trade him into an environment that's winning, right? If you feel like you're going to go get this guy and he's going to be like this positive, indomitable personality even when times are tough, you're going to trade this guy to, as a rental to a team that might suck next year and he sticks around, however that works out, that makes him hard to pallet because he's not a yes man that always toes the line.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because we were talking about the idea of him being flipped. Now, you have to point out he's got 10-5 rights, so the only way he's going somewhere is if he waves. But over the past 2 or 3 weeks, the conversation revolving around this team has been focused on 2018, what they're going to do between now and the deadline, and how they find a way to continue to make money. How do you keep people showing up at the park? How do you continue to put up ratings and sell paraphernalia? And Bautista's an interesting case because he's a Blue Jay legend. He's performed in some of the biggest games in franchise history. He's probably got the second or third most famous hit in team history. And yet, he's
the
got...
Which?
Game 5. Right. ALDS.
Where'd you rate it?
Second or third. Carter 1, maybe Alomar against the A's 2.
Yeah.
Okay, third. Let's say he's the third biggest hit in team history. This is a 40-year history, and he's got the third biggest hit. That's something that is significant. Would you not agree?
Maybe the third.
Maybe the third. Okay. Let's for argument's sake, say it's the third. Regardless, the point I'm making is, as we get sidetracked, that he's a Blue Jay legend. He's got options left, but everyone knows the elephant in the room. The team's not going to pick it up. He's not coming back next year. How do you think they sell, or how do you think they approach September with Bautista? Let's say he doesn't waive. Even if he does, no one wants him. And they go into September. The team knows this is it, yet the options are hanging over the situation. Do you think they promote it like, hey, come see him as a Blue Jay for the last time? Or do they just keep quiet, let it play out, don't pick up the option, see you later?
Oh, yeah, that's what every player wants, right? Hey, just start a PR campaign where you tell all the fans that this is my last year here and that you're definitely getting rid of me and that you're only going to platoon me from here on out because you got other guys you want to test to see if you can fill my position internally. I'm going to go along with that because nothing Dirk Hager said in the previous answer is even remotely true about me being honest, even in the face of a cruel reality, right? I can see that backfiring horribly and him taking a giant dump on the organization that basically built him into the legend that he is today.
Right.
So I'm thinking if I'm Jose Bautista, if someone comes along and says, we will trade for this guy because we feel like he can add some bench depth because of his ability to get on base and he's also a potential power threat. If I'm Jose Bautista, I'm thinking, well, this is my last chance to play for a winner. If they spin me off to this team and if they just get a bucket of balls and some sunflower seeds back, it's a chance for me to reinvent my career, you know, and go someplace where I can get some jewelry, which I would really like right now at this juncture. So I'm going to smile real big and pretty for you guys, and then you can do whatever you want. But beyond that, guys, I think if you're the organization, man, you sit him, you DH him, you platoon him, you do whatever you have to do, guys, because you got to get the rest the future ready. And you're worried about losing fans and losing money, and I hear you, boys. I hear you. But they're still coming out in droves, and this team is terrible. Okay? So I'm not led to believe that if they try and retool the team to make it better for next season, that they're going to see this incredible drop-off in fan base. I think fans want to see winners, and if you're going to deliver winners, you got to make hard decisions.
So is there a market for Bautista?
I think there is. I really do think that there is. I think that when you start talking about teams who want to load up on potential off-the-bench bats, think about Jose Bautista right now. I mean, I know the strikeouts are up, but the walks are still pretty steady. And I think that this is a guy who still has some power potential if he's put in a pressure situation, and I mean that by the defense. So you could see him coming off of the bench into some high-leverage scenarios where he really shines. I mean, he lives for the high-pressure moment, and that's probably where you're going to get the best of him. He's not going to play right field anymore. I mean, he's just a defensive liability, and he slowed down quite a step compared to other superstars that are younger than him, or even just younger guys that are breaking in, have more defensive range. And if the bat doesn't play for power in key situations, then really it doesn't play. You know, he's not a leadoff guy. His on-base percentage is great, but it's all based on walks. His foot speed is down. So I'm thinking, I want a guy who I can say, I want you to hit the damn ball out of the park. That's all you got to worry about when you're called upon. And if I'm Jose Bautista and someone picks up my number to do just that, thank you. I'll take that to the bank all day long and ride cushy into the postseason on whatever team I get my hands on for this year.
Always appreciate the insight and the takes. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, Dirk.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
Dirk Hayhurst, our baseball insider, brought to you by Oakland Ford Lincoln. Quick Lane, conveniently located at 570 Trafalgar Road in Oakville.
That was kind of a win for me. I'm going to say that was a bit of a win for me.
I think you're right.
I think it was
about Moneyball.
Yeah,
and
that was a bit of a win for me.
You pushed your case very well.
I'm feeling good about myself right now. I'm hungry.
You're preaching to the choir, man. Every day, this is the constant grind of Overdrive.
But O eats in front of you, right?
Oh, he eats.
Yeah,
he'll eat while we're on the air.
I know.
Apple.
I know he does. But it just that must you know like that's just not right. Eating in front of hungry people.
Although you've worked with noodles. You know the palate on noodles is about as deep as, you know.
Like, no, it's a puddle. It's a puddle. Like he
doesn't eat anything. He eats fries, plain chicken.
Yeah.
And pizza.
He eats like a five-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a bat.
That's the amazing thing is he never puts on weight. Like I am constantly concerned about what I'm eating. All the time. It takes over my life. I have a bad weekend, and I'm like, I got to eat clean for 3 or 4 days to balance everything out, or I'm going to balloon again. This guy eats garbage every single day, and he stays at 200.
He was a professional athlete.
So was O.
Well, you make the good point.
That's a counterpoint.
You make the good point. There is the intake issue with O.
Right.
So
he's not as balanced. Is that what you're saying? Because Noodles does work out.
Noodles' idea of a balanced meal is a piece of pizza in either hand. O is, you know, O is O. We love O.
We love O.
Where do you think O is right now?
He's not coming down here. I can guarantee you that.
If you had to guess, where would you think O is right now?
I doubt he's on the golf course because he's one of those guys that tees off at like 6:45.
Yeah.
He never plays like mid-afternoon.
No, too hot.
So probably out for dinner. Like that guy, he goes out for meals. What are there? 21 meals a week. If you're talking breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I would say he eats out 18 of the 21.
So I'm gonna put O in a t-shirt, shorts, and flip flops, on a patio, grousing about how cold it is and what a rotten summer it's been.
Mm-hmm. It's been an awful summer.
That's where I got O.
Yeah, I'd say that's about right. That's in the clubhouse as the leader.
Yeah.
In terms of potential, I'd put him in the same spot. He's in the city somewhere doing something, eating and drinking, I would assume. What's wrong with that?
I knew him when he played junior. People were worried about drafting Todd Bertuzzi because they thought Jeff O'Neill made him.
Is that right?
Yeah, O was a great player.
Oh, World Junior on the 95 team,
which was one
of the great teams ever.
Yeah, and a key player in that team.
He put up 6 or 8 points.
Called himself the goods.
He was on a line with Tucker, and I can't remember who else he had on his line.
Ryan Smith, I think, moved up to that line. Ryan Smith made that team as a 13th forward.
Right.
And I love that we're talking the World Junior in the middle of July.
I'm on board. Well, it's in Buffalo this year,
and I'm going to Michigan next week because Team Canada's having their training camp there against the Americans, the Swedes, and the Finns.
How does the draft year affect your anticipation for the World Junior? In other words, it wasn't a great draft this year.
Yeah. So what you don't know, so with this summer camp that they have, you don't know who's going to make it in the NHL. Now, there's two things. Who's going to start the year in the NHL and who's going to stay? So last year, Canada had a lot of guys that weren't available, 19-year-old players. You know, Nolan Patrick, I don't know if you heard, has this like face infection.
Guy's injured all the time.
Right. So I would think he probably won't make the Flyers. So I think Nolan Patrick's going to get a chance to play a star. I mean, I think Canada's going to have a lot of players on board this year out of this draft and out of last year's draft. Mm-hmm. They're going to go back to junior. So I think they might have a real good chance at it. You know, there's going to be some star young players, though. It's going to be unbelievable.
A lot of, like, Europeans this year.
Rasmus,
right? Like,
Dahlin,
yeah, Swedes.
He's coming to Plymouth next week.
He is going to be there.
You should come.
I would love to go down there and check that out. Because Liljegren's going to be there, too, right?
Yeah, Liljegren's going to be there, yeah.
Okay. Are they all down there? Like, is it the whole thing? Like, where Canada, States, Sweden, like a mini tourney?
Yeah.
Do we televise that?
Why do you think I'm going?
I thought you were going to scout. I don't know. Is Ferraro coming in for that?
No.
Please tell me they call Ray in for
that.
Could they get Ray to do anything between July 1st and Labor Day?
If
who's more difficult to get out of their respective routine,
if
McKenzie or Ferraro?
If a National Hockey League player commandeered an aircraft and took hostages, Ray might do a phoner.
Maybe call something.
Maybe.
In.
Depending how good the player was, Ray might do a phone.
He might call it in. Bob probably
no
maybe a text.
Shot. No shot.
Maybe a text.
Bob might tweet about it.
We've had a lot of guys join us around the table today. Doug Flutie was in here.
Pinball.
Pinball was in here. We're live at BMO Field. And
I'm here.
Gord Miller's here. This is the first time you've been on Overdrive.
Pretty big deal for me.
I'm not surprised. I expected you to bring the heat.
I was waiting for the pleasantly surprised because
that's
kind of a passive aggressive.
Right.
You know, like when people say, you know, you're better looking person than I thought you'd be. what did you think I was going to be?
Yeah, exactly. We're going to get into the NBA stuff. Kyrie Irving.
Oh, man.
And he wants out of Cleveland. Now there's reports that he's not happy because he believes LeBron's camp leaked the
trade request. And Derrick Rose is there sniffing around.
Sounds like he's going to end up in Cleveland. We'll get into the soap opera.
This only happens
NBA.
To bad teams, right? I thought bad teams had soap opera.
That's the difference. It's flipped in the NBA now. The best teams are the guys that they're the ones with controversy. They're the ones with trade requests. They're the ones with people either going to stick around or they're going to leave. And we'll talk about where the league should be coming into play on this. Because I got a take on that about how the NBA should be feeling about this request and whether or not it should be executed. Gord Miller's here. I'm Brian Hayes. We're outside of BMO Field. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050. Just opening, it's Doug Flutie bobblehead night tonight. Argos Red Blacks, we had Doug Flutie join us around the table earlier on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Don't forget, Red Tag Days are on now with 0% financing and lease rates on Toyota Corollas and RAV4s. Visit mapletoyota.ca. Gordon Miller's been along for the ride throughout the afternoon.
Yeah.
That was like a read you dropped during your games, man. You guys.
We had one years ago on junior hockey. I think it was Auto Pro, which like listed every part of a car.
So how long did it take?
Like brought to you by Auto Pro, makers of bumpers, suspension, front wheel drive. Like it was like every part of oil pans. Like it was like seriously? Like
I love the way guys like yourself can just mid play by play, you just drop a read out of nowhere. Like, yeah, this power play brought to you by, and then boom,
well,
you're right back.
When I do games for NBC, that they have the, and here the one was, they had one for NBC. It was like, brought to you by Jack, this power play brought to you by Jack Daniels Tennessee Honey Whiskey. I'm like, okay.
Nice.
We had one, I was doing the, years ago, I was doing the news in Edmonton, and right before, because normally you don't hear the commercials on TV, but for some reason you could, and it said, it was for Chi-Chi's Mexican Restaurant, and it said, I still laugh now, it said, come to Chi-Chi's, get a dollar, and their slogan was, feel a little Mexican. And so it said, get a dollar off when you feel a little Mexican. And the news anchor said to me, okay, but how small is the Mexican? And I honestly, they came back, I had tears in my eyes.
You were toast.
I was done. Couldn't stop.
Have you ever been uncontrollable on the air, calling a game?
Laughing?
Yeah, something happens, someone says something.
But I've had, there was a guy, what was his first name again? His last name was Stipscitz. So I asked him, he played for Hungary at the World Championship. Is it Stipscitz? No, it's Stipschitz. I'm like, come on. No, his name is pronounced Stipschitz.
You got to go with the name. You're a pro.
Every time I said it, Ray Ferraro would start laughing.
What a shock.
So I had to turn away from the play. And the guy was like their best defenseman. He had the puck. Well, not all the time.
He's a Bobby Orr.
Hungary didn't really have the puck a lot. But
the Hungarian Bobby Orr.
Stipschitz was the only guy doing anything for Hungary. And every time I said it, Ray was cackling like a 12-year-old.
See,
but no, I've not.
I don't know how you get away with, like, I don't know how you find a way to spit out some of those names during the World Juniors.
Well, the great thing, people say that to me all the time, right? How do you get those? I'm saying, you don't know those players. I know them right.
Well, that's true.
Except the problem.
Maybe it's not Stipchitz after all.
TSN Classic. ESPN Classic.
So
Canada.
They'll replay the game.
Oh, so you go back.
And if that guy turned into an NHLer and everyone knows the name.
And what bugs you is when you ask the players how to say their name, usually in that tournament they ask for it to be said the way they'd say it back home.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they come to North America, they anglicize it.
Well, that's going to happen with Liljegren if he ever gets here. Because at the draft, he came around the table. Now, we were doing a pre-tape, so I kind of got out of it. I'll out myself now. I don't care. But I butchered his name. It got to the point.
Would you say Liljegren?
I said, because right before he got to the table, we were set up, we were getting ready. He came over, and he had a rep with him from the Leafs, and I leaned over. I said, how do you pronounce your name? And he, like, rolls his R, and
it was
like a really deep Swedish pronunciation. Naturally, that's his name, and he's Swedish. And I just looked at him, and I'm like, I'm toast. I can't even attempt to say it. So we bring him in. Joining us now, we're live in Chicago. Here is Timothy Lill. I butchered it.
He did?
And then I stopped myself and I said, can you pronounce your name? Which I probably shouldn't have done, because then when he did it, it was on the air. I still can't say it.
So years ago, I'm working in Edmonton, and the Edmonton Trappers were the AAA affiliate of the California Angels. And by the way, a loaded team. A great, like, Wally Joyner, Jack Howell, Devon White. Great team. Their manager was a guy, Winston, and his last name was L-L-E-N-A-S. So the Angels media guide said it was pronounced Janus, which I assumed was correct. So I said, Winston, is your name pronounced Janus? And he said, Jess. Which gave me no help whatsoever.
Totally uncalled for.
Yeah.
Yet he's probably had that in his wheelhouse, that joke, that response. He's said it to every play-by-play guy he's come across.
But yeah, the names are... I think that as long as we know who we're talking about, like, look, Russians will say all the time, like, Sergei Fedorov, his name in Russian is Fyodorov, right? And we're merging, we're evolving towards the Russian pronunciation. Like, you see Yemelin, you know, Varlamov, the accent on the middle syllable.
Right. Well, a lot of guys, like, they get over here, it gets Americanized, and then 5 years into their career, they're like, forget that. I want my name to be my name.
Mario Lemieux is Lemieux in French.
Mm-hmm. Right? Well, so, look at Parise. It was Parise forever.
Well, in Canada, it's Parise. His dad was... essentially,
J.P. Parise is Canadian.
And French-Canadian. French-Canadian.
Right. And now, though, ever since he's been to the States, it's Parise.
Yeah.
But, and halfway into his career, though, he changed it. He said, wait a minute, I don't want to be Parise anymore.
So at the World Junior, I said to Brad Marchand, how do you say your name? He said, Marchand, rhymes with sand. Great. For some reason in Boston, it evolved into Marchand. I kept calling him Marchand. He scored a big overtime goal. I did the game for NBC. He scores a big overtime goal. And these Bruins fans are calling NBC saying he's saying his name wrong. Teach him to say the name right. And I went to Brad. I said, Brad, it's Marchand. He goes, yeah, but you're the only one that says it.
So did you change?
No, actually, the Bruins put out a thing and said, it's Marchand, rhymes with sand.
I feel like a guy's got to have enough clout, though. As crazy as that sounds, to change your own name, you have to be like a defiant player.
But you know, like Mike Modano, right?
It's your name.
Mike Modano went crazy because everyone called him Modano, right, in Canada. Madonna. Like, so people get tired of it. And Europeans just like, you could, a lot of Europeans say you couldn't pronounce
it. But they're not paying attention probably anyway. I mean, a lot of them, if they're not speaking English, they're maybe home and watching the game.
Most of them just don't care, right? Like, I mean, you know, we need more Brian Hayes in the world.
As generic as you can find. Gord Miller and Brian Hayes.
When I started out, someone told me that they wanted me to, my middle name's Matthew, they want to be Matt Miller.
Matt Miller.
Because Gord Miller's hard to say.
How?
I mean, for who?
Yeah, no kidding.
It's three syllables. Like, what's hard about that?
I don't know.
But, yeah, the names of the World Junior, but for the most part, like, Russian names, they're long, but they're not that hard.
Do you prep, though? Like, are you talking to yourself on the way to the rink? Are you on the flight overseas?
No.
Yeah, because that would freak me out.
Warm up.
That would freak me out.
I'm just looking at the warm up. I mean, I know their names and numbers, but I'm not practicing stuff like that. I mean,
yeah, see, I'd have to.
Like, somebody said to me, the Eberle goal in 09, like, you know, can you believe it? And someone said, well, you rehearsed that. Yeah, because I was sitting in my hotel room thinking, if they score the tying goal with 5 seconds left, what would I say? I would sit there and think about that.
There are guys that do that, though, right?
Well, I think they have, like, the championship thing. Like, you know, like Jim Nantz does that, I think.
Sure.
You know, like,
at the end of a Super Bowl, it's over. What are you going to say?
Like, UConn wins the national championship. Yes, UConn.
Yeah.
Like, you know, or... he's thought about sort of, I don't do that.
Is that like a faux pas in the industry?
No, basically passing gas on the air is a faux pas.
That would make for some
burping.
Interesting...
See, burping.
We do that on Overdrive all the
you
time.
You don't burp on the air.
O-Dog, first day...
O-Dog does not burp on the air.
First day on Overdrive. We had moved from the afternoon, early afternoon, to 4 to 7. The first show, first segment, Barney Gumble on the air. And we blew it up. We replayed it. We had a new audience. We wanted people to know what you're walking into.
Well,
what you're going to get
now?
With
you know.
Show.
So let's this NBA thing.
Yes, Kyrie Irving. Because I got a lot of takes on it. What do you make of this request?
I think Irving actually led the Cavs in shots attempted this year, and played on a team with LeBron James.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say this: it takes a special kind of player to be that talented and stand in the shadow of somebody else. To be Scottie Pippen, to Michael Jordan, to be.
You're talking about how special LeBron is.
No.
Or Kyrie.
Kyrie
Irving. To accept it?
Yeah, Kyrie Irving's a really good NBA player. He's a star player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
On most other teams, he would be the go-to guy. Right?
On 20 teams in the league, he'd be the best player on the team.
Right.
At least 20.
Right. So that's true of Evgeny Malkin.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's true of Peter Forsberg, who played with Joe Sakic. That's true of Scottie Pippen. That's true of a lot of guys. You know what? Klay Thompson in Golden State?
Look at Kevin Durant. Now you could argue
Durant chose to go there.
He chose to go there, and you could argue he's actually better than Steph. They're in the same ballpark. You can have that argument. Here's the thing, though, that if I'm the NBA, I'm praying this doesn't happen. I'm praying one of the teams finally puts their sword in the sand and says, I'm not accepting that the players run everything anymore. Because Kyrie Irving is... I think speaking out of both sides of his mouth, or at least the report is, he allegedly wants to get out from underneath the shadow of LeBron James. He wants to be the man somewhere. He wants a bigger role. To your point, he had more shots than anyone on the team.
Yep.
He was definitively the second best player on a team that went to the finals 3 years in a row. The only reason he's the second best is because maybe the greatest of all time happens to be on his team. But you look at the requests in terms of where he wants to go. He wants to go to San Antonio. That's Kawhi Leonard's team. Kawhi Leonard,
yeah.
One of the few guys in the NBA, better than Kyrie Irving.
Wants to go to Houston.
Wants to go to Minnesota. I think Karl Anthony Towns, if he's not already the same level as Kyrie Irving, eventually he's going to be better. Jimmy Butler just got there.
Right.
He wants to go to teams that are already great, already made, or at least on the precipice of pushing over the top. So it's not as if he's saying, put me on the worst team in the league and I'm going to build it up. So you can't pretend like you're convincing people, okay, I want to be the man, I'm going to buck the trend, forget LeBron, forget his shadow, send me somewhere and I'm going to own a place. When the requests, outside of the Knicks, which are a disaster,
yeah.
Minnesota and San Antonio in particular, those are made teams. Those are teams with studs already on them. How different is that going to be than the situation you find yourself in Cleveland?
And the Cavs are already talking to Derrick Rose. LeBron has kind of made it clear in his own passive-aggressive way that he's disappointed. Now, the Irving camp is saying that the
LeBron's
camp leaked the trade request.
Which speaks to the attitudes and the egos. LeBron is LeBron.
But here's the other part where Irving is a bit of a hypocrite. Remember the trade that almost happened that became public? There was a three-way deal that Irving was going to be in,
mm-hmm.
and he was bitter they were going to trade him.
Well, because it wasn't his control. And that's why I'm saying if I'm the NBA, at some point you've got to stop these players from being able to dictate
everything.
So
you want the Ted Stepien rule. Remember when Ted Stepien owned the Cavs, they were so bad that the NBA actually prohibited him from making trades.
Right.
They passed a rule that you can't trade your first pick like more than 2 years in a row or something.
Well, and also look at this, Gord. This is a guy who has played on a team that has been to the NBA Finals 3 years in a row and he wants out. If you allow that to happen, the guy on the worst team in the league?
But Brian, the problem is some guys would rather be the star on a lesser team. He probably thinks if he's playing for another team, he'd be a $40 million a year player.
Yeah, he would be. But he'd actually be... He's under contract for another 2 or 3 years, I believe. And this Supermax that's now available,
yeah.
If he waives that and gets traded, I don't believe that would be available to him. So he would be actually leaving some money on the table.
But how do they bring him back? Now you can't bring him back.
Well,
LeBron's turned his back on him.
This is where it's on LeBron, though. If LeBron could make this convincing to him, he could go to him and say, this is what's going to happen. I'm leaving at the end of the year, and then it is your team.
Right.
But this is why, again, I think this is fake tough guy, fake bravado, fake I'm the man out of Kyrie Irving. He wants out because he knows LeBron's going to leave, and then they're going to be awful. But I thought you were so great, you can build them up. So, again, he wants his cake, and he wants to eat it, too. He wants to prove that he's the man.
Why can't you have your cake and eat it, too? Isn't that the point?
Well, you can strive for it, but, no, but you're not fooling anybody.
If you have cake, why can't you eat it? I want to eat cake. I'm hungry.
I guess
right
technically
now
you could.
Could you're someone right could someone outside listening please bring me a hot dog?
We got one
I'm
more
not asking
segment
for much.
Someone hook up Gord Miller, please. We're live at BMO Field ahead of the game tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN 1050. All right, time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I'm on the Astros tonight in Philly. I'll take
bad call.
You don't like that?
Nope.
Houston's best team in the American League.
Got the Phillies at home.
Phillies are brutal. I'll take Cleveland as well. They just swept the Jays. They'll keep rolling against the Reds. And I'm on the Argos to win by 4+ tonight because Doug Flutie's in the house. You like Ottawa?
I think you might be wrong on that one.
Well, we'll see. People are starting to pour in. I'm feeling it down here.
Are you?
Yeah.
What'd you learn today?
What have I learned?
What's your biggest takeaway from this 3 hours?
You appreciate the numbers, but you think they're too amplified when it comes to Moneyball, that Billy Bean is overrated, right?
Yeah.
You don't practice crazy names at the World Juniors. You're hungry.
Yeah.
What else did I learn? That you were 23 during the Gretzky trade, and they had to sign off on your likeness for the 30 for 30.
Which has haunted me ever since.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot more. I'll go back and listen.
I've learned a lot. Doug Flutie wanted to be a basketball player.
Who knew that?
That was interesting.
D2 and D3 options. Yeah. Never a D1. Went to football instead.
He was interesting. He and Mike Pinball.
Two great guys, aren't
yeah
they? I mean, pinball for mayor, I actually think it would happen. You and I, we both agree on
and
that.
And we learned that pinball has entertained thoughts of going to politics, but it hasn't so far.
We'll see what happens. All right, Gord, thanks for doing this, man.
My pleasure.
Let's do it again.
Well, we'll see about that.
It's on you.
I'm taking a wait and see attitude.
Okay.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
You're always welcome. The door's open. There he is, the great Gord Miller. I'm Brian Hayes. We're live from BMO Field. The Argos are up next. Andy Mack with the pregame and the call in about a half an hour. Enjoy that tonight. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.